It's the Morning Show on the Ideas Network. I'm Carrie Kaufman. Wisconsin state parks are perfect for sky watching on a clear night. The Big Dipper feels like it's coming down to scoop you up. And if you're a grade schooler, you can find the North Star and imagine the lessons you learned about Harriet Tubman and how the star guided her as she took slaves to freedom. But most of us don't know much beyond those obvious signs. Luckily, our state parks are also locations for UW-Madison's Universe in the Park programs. Held at two or three different parks each weekend, the Universe in the Park program will teach people what to look for in the sky. Are you a stargazer? What is your favorite part of looking at the stars? Have you watched the sky since you were a kid? Maybe you're a kid now. What do you love about space and universe? 1-800-642-1234. Ideas at WPR.org or tweet us at WPR Mornings. I know this is wishful thinking, hoping that kids are awake at 6:09 a.m., but some maybe. Give us a call if you are and you like stargazing. In studio with me now are two people from UW-Madison's Department of Astronomy. Eric Wilcotts is a professor. His research focuses on understanding the evolution of galaxies and galaxy groups. That's really cool, Eric. Welcome to the program.
Thank you. It's great to be here.
And Julie Davis is here. She's a graduate student in astronomy at UW-Madison. Thanks for coming in this morning.
Yeah, thank you.
So we are talking about the universe today because of this program that encourages people at state parks to observe the sky. When you're camping, when you're experiencing nature, we tend to look at trees and streams and wildlife and enjoy the fresh air. People don't necessarily think to look up. Like we go into our tents when we're camping and, you know, it's time to go to sleep. We sit by the campfire. But looking up is really important, Eric.
Yes, yeah, and so when you go to the state parks, you're out camping, and the great thing about them is they're far away from city lights. And so the sky is darker than most people get to see it on a nightly basis. And so if after you've put that campfire out, take a moment to look up, and for many people, they will be seeing more stars than they have ever seen.
Wow.
When they get out to some of the really dark places in the state, the really dark state parks. And it's a great experience, and that's how a lot of us actually got started doing astronomy in the
right.
first place.
So how do I know? Like, I can identify some things. The Big Dipper is kind of obvious. Orion's Belt is kind of obvious. But there, when I get out there and there's all these stars in the sky, how do I know what I'm looking at? like seriously, is there a guide of some sort? Julie, is there a guide of some sort?
So a lot of us, to get started, you know, we'll actually cheat and use some of these technological apps that we have nowadays. You know, everyone's like, oh, these astronomers are going to be, you know, very good at identifying the night sky. But no, even we need to practice a little bit before we can actually start recognizing things. So I would recommend, you know, going on the internet, Googling just what constellations are up tonight, like finding some patterns, and then going out and seeing if you can see them. And then with practice, it gets a little easier.
Okay, so let's say we're going to go out to our state park tomorrow night, because you guys are holding this this weekend.
Yes.
And there are a few state parks that you're holding them in. Governor Dodge is near Madison. There's another one I saw that's up north, maybe a third. But if we go out, what are we going to see in the night sky, Julie? What constellations are up there?
All right, so right now we're in the summer months, and so this is going to change what you're able to see. Many of you are probably familiar with finding Orion, but Orion is only up during the winter. So during the summer, you're going to want to look for some of the constellations like Cygnus, the Swan, Lyra, or Aquila, the Eagle. These are the ones that I personally find easiest to find. And the easiest way I find to go about looking for these is to look for what we call an asterism, which is not a full constellation, not a named constellation, but a pattern that's easier to pick out in the night sky. The Big Dipper is actually an asterism, not a constellation. The constellation that the Big Dipper in is Ursa Major, but what we can commonly find is the ladle shape,
right.
And so that's called an asterism. For me, during the summer, finding the summer triangle, it's made of three bright stars, Deneb in Cygnus, and Altair in Aquila, and Vega, which is the easiest star to find during the summer. It's bright and directly overhead. So if you can find this triangle, you can find Cygnus, the swan. It looks kind of like a cross, and you can find Aquila, the eagle.
Interesting. So, Eric, how did this Universe in the Parks program get started? This is like 12 years old
now,
right?
It is. So older than that. So that started in 1995. Okay. We had a couple of postdocs in the department at the time, and they just loved to camp. And they had this idea of, gee, since we love to camp, why don't we take a telescope with us? And then they started with sort of their five favorite state parks. And then they moved on to bigger and better things and got faculty jobs at the University of Toledo. And I had just arrived in Madison at the time, and I said, oh, I'll take over this program.
Oh, okay.
And so we expanded it to as many state parks as we could possibly get. And so every beginning of every year, we send out a letter to essentially all of the naturalists at all the state parks that have evening programs. Mm. And we start building the schedule in March. So it started in the mid-1990s as an outreach program, initially funded by some funding from NASA, and then for many, many years funded by the National Science Foundation, and then more recently funded by Jerry and Ann Fluno, donors to the department who just loved the program. They wanted to support it. And so we use that money to make sure the grad students get a little bit of compensation for their time, pay for the gas, keep the telescopes up and things like that. But it really started out with what we were talking about earlier, that the best way to experience the night sky is to get away from the city lights.
Get away from the city lights.
The state parks around Wisconsin are a great place to do that.
So tell me about how this works. Like, you send a bunch of people out to state parks every weekend. Is this only a grad student thing? And are you camping when you're doing this, Julie?
Yes. So this is predominantly done by the graduate students in the department. And we each take turns going to the different parks. Some of them are pretty far away from Madison.
Yes.
We do like Copper Falls and Big Bay way up on Lake Superior. So we'll drive out, and we arrive at the park, we set up our campsites, and then as it gets closer to sunset, we will set up a talk. So grad students will pick whatever they're interested in. It could be a talk about the solar system or galaxies or, I don't know, like the fate of the universe. It varies. It varies every week, depending on what the grad
fate
student's interested in.
Fate of the universe.
Yeah.
Are we getting into politics here? I'm not really sure. Okay.
But yeah, so we'll give a half hour plus or minus a little bit of time talk to the public, let them ask questions, and then by then, at the end of the talk, it's usually dark enough that you can see lots of things with the telescope. So we have 8 and 10-inch telescopes that we drag with us. Sometimes it's harder to drag them than others, given that there's ferries involved for some of these state parks.
Right, right, like Rock Island. You have to actually have your camping equipment and your telescopes and what have you. Do you go out in pairs then?
Yes, yes. Okay. Predominantly, we work in pairs. Some of the braver souls will do it alone. I personally don't have the arm strength to lift our 50-pound telescope up onto the ferries, so I definitely like working in pairs. But then, so someone will lead the observing on the telescopes we bring. We set them up just out in various open locations in the state parks. Sometimes it can be challenging if there's no trees or, you know, too many trees.
Right.
But yeah, then we do an hour or so of observing the sky, looking at different objects.
Interesting. And the people who come are the people who are camping.
Yes.
Do people actually come to this because you're doing this, because they want to see the stars, or they're just kind of in the park anyway? And, somebody's doing a stargazing thing.
Yeah, it's a little bit of both. We have some people that actually came into the park solely for the show. Some of the smaller parks, this is particularly common. But at the larger parks, most of the people are just like, oh, hey, this thing is going on tonight. Let's bring the kids and let's go learn about the sky.
This actually might get me out to camping here. Eric, why is it important to start this around sunset? What happens to the sky after that?
So we want to be able to see the stars, right? And so when the sun goes down, we're going to get the sky's going to start to darken. And in some cases, if we're lucky, we'll see a few bright planets that emerge early on in the evening. So Venus is one that the evening star. If Jupiter's up, you can start to see that sort of right after sunset. But then what we do is we start that, and as Julie said, we got this half-hour talk, and the sky will get a little darker. And as you're talking, you know, people will start looking up and realizing that more and more stars are becoming visible. So during that talk, kind of whets the appetite for looking in and through the telescope. And so by the time the talk's over, the sky's pretty dark. We get to see all the stars that we get to see. And if you're at a really dark place like a Rock Island or, say, a Newport, you really get this impressive view and missing the summer of the Milky Way. And that is looking at that band of light that goes across the sky. Mm-hmm. It's really prominent in the summer, as long as you can get away from the city lights. And that's our own home galaxy, the Milky Way. And that really starts getting people fired up to look through the telescope.
We are contemplating the stars on the morning show. Eric Wilcox is a professor in the Department of Astronomy at the University of Wisconsin-Madison. Julie Davis is a graduate student in astronomy at UW-Madison. They both help run a program in our state parks. You can go camping. You can hang out in the parks. You can listen to them tell you about the stars. I assume you're going to point these things out. You point out where Venus and everything is and learn about our galaxy. We'll be back in a moment with more about this. It's The Morning Show. It's The Morning Show on the Ideas Network. I'm Carrie Kaufman. The night sky is fodder for romantic films, Shakespeare quotes, and guidance when you're lost. But how many of us know the details about what we're looking at? UW-Madison's Universe in the Park program allows campers and park visitors a chance to learn about the stars in some of the most beautiful places in Wisconsin, our state parks. We want to hear from you on this. Do you like looking at the stars? And do you go into your backyard and try and find the constellations? What is the value for you of looking at the night sky? Give us a call, 800-642-1234. You can also email us at ideas@wpr.org or tweet us at WPR Mornings. This Friday morning, we are talking to Julie Davis, who is a graduate student and in astronomy at UW-Madison, and Eric Wilcox is a professor in the Department of Astronomy at UW-Madison. So this weekend, if it's dry, Eric, people can go, this is very disappointing to me that it's going to be raining in my area. So this weekend, people can go to Governor Dodge State Park,
yes,
which is about an hour west of Madison.
Just about an hour west of Madison.
Right. And they can also go to Kohler Andre State Park, which is north of Milwaukee, between Milwaukee and Sheboygan, right?
Right.
And they will get to see the same kinds of things in both spaces.
Oh, sure. Yeah. Okay. So within the state on a given night, we're going to be looking at the same stars whether you're in Colorado.
Yeah, of course you are.
Or you're in Governor Dodge, right, or whether you're up at Copper Falls,
or even if you're in New York State, or
even
it
right,
is the sky.
Right, yeah.
Right.
So we'll be seeing the same things. And what we try to do is just to get out to as many parks as we can, so as many people as possible can take advantage of the program.
Mm-hmm.
But folks should be seeing the same things. If, again, as you say, if the skies are clear.
If the skies are clear and it's not raining on us, we should be able to do the same thing. What are the right conditions in terms of, you know, on the ground for being able to observe the universe? You want to talk to that, Julie?
Sure. So
you talked about trees. We can't have too many trees, right?
Right, right.
But what are the other conditions that people need to kind of look for to be able to see the sky really well?
Mm-hmm. So you want an unobstructed view of the sky, of course. You also want it to be clear. And surprisingly, humidity can actually affect observations, especially if you're using a telescope or wind as well. So you want your night to be as clear and calm as possible for the absolute best viewing and the best resolution with your telescope. So if you have a telescope, like a small one that you like to take out, the best nights to take it out are when it's very calm and very clear. Yeah.
Okay. And if it's raining, will you guys even go out to these parks? You know?
Yes.
You
yes.
will.
Yeah. Even if it's raining, we will give a talk under a shelter in the park. I have done several where it's been raining. So the talk will almost always happen as long as there's somewhere where we can set up a projector without it getting soaked.
Okay.
But the observing obviously is very sky contingent.
Okay. And people go camping in the rain. Okay, so they will be there. We were talking about the night sky. We were talking about looking at the night sky, looking at the constellations, which you can do in our state parks with this program from UW-Madison. Have you and your family or friends gone to these events? Give us a call, 800-642-1234, or you can email ideas@WPR.org or WPR Mornings. I want to be able to identify things. I want to be able to identify simply the North Star. Eric, how do I find that?
All right. So if you can find the Big Dipper, and so in your mind, so it looks like a ladle.
Right, it does look like a ladle.
It does look like a ladle. Yes. So if you think about the Big Dipper in your mind, the two stars on the edge of the Big Dipper, on the edge of that cup, right?
Okay, yes.
Not the handle, but the other side.
Right.
Take those two stars, right, and follow them, and they will point you to the North Star.
Interesting.
Now, interesting enough, the North Star is actually the end of the handle of the Little Dipper.
I've heard this before. Okay.
Right. And so the old African-American saying, follow the drinking gourd,
right,
as you were going north. That's the Big Dipper, right? And that's the guy to go north, right? So that's one thing you can find.
And you can see this without a telescope.
North Star, you can see it without a telescope.
Is it better to see it in the summer? Is it better? When Harriet Tubman was bringing people up, was she bringing them up during a specific time of year when she could see the sky better?
Now the Big Dipper is one of these things
just getting people out of there.
Getting people out of there, right?
Exactly.
January, November doesn't matter.
Doesn't matter.
But the Big Dipper is up all year long.
Okay.
And so the North Star is up all year long.
Okay.
And so you can see this all year. And so it just varies in sort of how high in the sky it is. In the summer in Wisconsin, it's particularly high in the sky. But you can that's how you get the North Star and the Big Dipper. So find the Big Dipper. The edge of that cup of the Big Dipper points you to the North Star. Now, the other thing, if you want to get a little more ambitious in your star finding, you go to the handle of the Big Dipper.
Handle the Big Dipper.
And we say the expression, follow the arc to Arcturus. So if you take the curvature of that handle, it points you to a reddish star that's called Arcturus.
Mm-hmm.
So now you know another star in the night sky.
Okay, fine. And what does Arcturus do? What does it mean? Why is it red?
It is red because it's an evolved, massive, more massive star than the sun, and it's getting sort of old age-ish, and as it does, it expands and cools down and becomes what we call a red giant. And so it is red because its temperature is cooler than that of the sun, and it's bright because it's pretty big.
So I gotta ask you, what are stars made of? This is like a 5-year-old question, but I need to know. What are stars made of, Eric?
Stars are largely made of hydrogen and helium. So the simplest of the elements. So they are made of atoms, like you and I are made of atoms.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Now, the stars are big. There's lots of stuff
they're
there.
They're really big. They're
right?
bigger than they're, we are. They're bigger Much bigger than we than are. We are.
And predominantly, as is most of the stuff in the universe, is mostly hydrogen, the simplest of atoms. Then there's a bunch of helium. And then there's lots of other stuff, iron, calcium, magnesium, but they're largely made out of atoms. Now, the temperature, the densities are much different than what you and I are used to.
Mm-hmm.
But basically, that's what stars are made of.
And they're old.
They are. Many of them are old. Some of them are new. Stars are forming all the time. So there are some very young stars in the Milky Way. If you look at in the winter sky, look at Orion. You know Orion's belt.
Yes.
Go a little below Orion's belt. There's a little faint smudge, which if you're in a good dark site, is Orion's sword.
Okay.
Think of having a sword in his belt.
Okay.
That is a star-forming region. You're looking at a region in the galaxy where new stars are being formed.
Wow. And do we know why? So you're like, honestly.
So we think we have a fairly good understanding. There's still lots of stuff we don't know, but clouds of gas compress and get denser, and as they compress over time, eventually a cloud of gas will turn into a star. That's how we think our own solar system formed some 4.5 billion years ago.
We are talking about the stars. We are talking about going camping and looking at the stars with Eric Wilcotts and Julie Davis from UW-Madison. We're taking your calls We generally tend to start looking at stars from our own backyard. Have you done that? What is your story? Have your kids camped in the backyard and you've told them what the stars are, or used one of those apps to figure out what the stars are, which are kind of cool? Give us a call, 800-642-1234, or email us at mornings@WPR.org. I'm out there. I'm looking at these stars. I should be able to see. I've seen the Aurora Borealis once. It was pretty amazing. I was walking around. I was working at a camp here in Wisconsin. I was walking around with a friend, and then we encountered two friends who were laying on the ground. And we were like, "Why are you laying on the ground?" And they were like, "Just look up." And we didn't even notice until they said that. So there's an Aurora Borealis that's here on Sunday, right? Talk to me about that, Julie.
Right. So an aurora, so if we take a couple steps back, the sun is very energetic, right? It gives us all the life on Earth with its, you know, warmth and heat. And it is also sending energetic particles in what we call solar wind towards the Earth, right?
Solar wind.
Yeah, so this is kind of like a product of the nuclear reactions going on. And these particles come towards Earth, but luckily we have a magnetic field that wraps around our planet. And it's the same thing that makes your compasses work. This magnetic field protects us from those high energy particles. They come streaming towards the Earth, but they get captured along the magnetic field lines, and that directs it to the North and South Pole. Mm. And when these start to interact with the oxygen and nitrogen molecules in our atmosphere, they light up. Right? The high energy gets dissipated in the upper regions of the atmosphere, and this causes that glow that we see as the aurora. Now, sometimes the sun is more active than others. It has an 11-year solar cycle. And as it gets more active, you see brighter auroras, and they start to come a little farther south. Like, it takes a little more distance on the magnetic field to dissipate that energy. So if there's a very powerful bit of solar wind that impacts the magnetic fields, you're going to see it farther south, and then you'll get that nice glow, sometimes as far south as Madison.
So it doesn't really go much more south than that usually.
Right.
How often do we get to see the Aurora Borealis?
So it's fairly intermittent, right? It's kind of dependent on the sun having these outbursts. If you take a look at some of the satellite imagery that NASA has of the sun, you can see these sunspots, and that's where magnetic field lines on the sun have coiled up. And eventually they get a little stressed due to the sun's rotation, and they will snap, and that will cause the particles to fly towards the Earth. But we can't really predict when this will happen. So, you know, it's a little random.
Right. So, but we know that it's happening Sunday, right? Eric, is this happening Sunday?
I think what we know is that the sun had, as Julie said, one of these events.
Okay.
Right. And so it takes a certain amount of time for those particles to get from the sun to the Earth. So you can say, gee, 3 or 4 days later, we have a good chance of seeing an aurora. There's no guarantees. Right. But there's a higher probability because of what happened on the sun. And of course, the farther north you go, the more likely you're going to see them. So if you can get that quick trip to northern Manitoba or something, you have a really good chance of
northern Manitoba in Canada.
Yeah, in Canada.
Right. Not Lake Superior. Like, if you go to Lake Superior, you may be able to see it.
The farther north you get, the better off you are. And if your northern horizon is darker. So my problem is I live in Fitchburg.
Ooh.
And so if I want to see the aurora, I'm looking over the lights of Madison, and it's really, really tough from my backyard. Folks who live, say, in Wanakee,
right,
where their northern horizon is much darker, they'll even have a better chance than folks who live, say, down in Stoughton or Fitchburg.
But there's a good chance that we may not be able to see this in Madison, that it may be just too far south. We are talking about Universe in the Park. It is a program by UW-Madison that you can see at pretty much every state park in the state. They pick two or three out a weekend and send grad students out to talk to campers about what they're seeing in the night sky. We have two people here who help run the program. And we are looking for your calls. We want to know what your questions are about astronomy that our two experts here can answer. What do you want to know about the night sky? What do you want to know about what kind of telescope you should get? Have you always wanted a telescope? Give us a call, 800-642-1234, or ideas at WPR.org. Okay, so we've talked about how people can possibly recognize what they see using apps. There are things that we can see, Julie, with our eyes. But what are we going to see if we use one of these telescopes?
Right. So some of our favorite targets to look at are the planets. They're much closer than any star other than our own sun, obviously.
Mm, obviously.
I get that as a smart aleck answer quite a bit when I ask, what is the brightest star? And there's always a little kid that's like, the sun!
So that makes total sense.
It catches me every single time. But yeah, so the planets are remarkably bright in the night sky. You can see them with your naked eye. But if you look at them with even a fairly small telescope, or sometimes even binoculars, you can start to pick out details. We get Jupiter, and you can see its moons, actually, when you use a relatively small telescope. Mm. Saturn, you can see the rings. And when we go to truly dark skies, such as Newport, which is a dark sky designated park and one of a few in the whole U.S., it's very hard to get this designation. Hmm. You can see things like the Andromeda Galaxy, which is not even within our own galaxy. It is a separate galaxy, our nearest galactic neighbor, so to speak.
Andromeda. It's an actual galaxy. It's not just a science fiction thing.
Yes.
That's pretty cool. So what designates a park a dark park? I don't understand.
Right. So we've been talking about how it's hard to see in Madison mm-hmm. some of these, you know, fainter stars. You go out to a dark park and you can see, you know, way more stars than you saw before. And that's because the amount of background light has dropped significantly. And so we can measure that. There's a way to quantify it. And to be designated a dark sky park, you need to have a certain level. You need to be below a certain threshold of ambient light in the atmosphere. And so they go out and they do these measurements, and if you pass, then you have a truly dark sky.
That's interesting, and that also affects, I would assume, development. There are restrictions about development in the area if you get this dark sky designation.
I don't know if there are restrictions, but it's something that certainly Newport takes great pride.
We don't want development,
right? And saying, yeah, we are a dark sky location, and that attracts people to come there to particularly enjoy the night sky.
We are taking your calls here to talk about the night sky. Tracy from Milwaukee, welcome to the program.
Good morning. How are you?
Good. What's your question?
Well, I was going to say that when I was young. I actually saw the aurora. I grew up in a town just south of Madison, and I still can't even believe that I saw it, but I did. It was amazing. And then we used to also lay in the grass when we were young and watch the night sky, and we all at one time saw a star go out. Ooh. And we all were, like, amazed at this. And so I just thought I would ask, like, what did we actually see?
What makes a star go out? We're going to start answering this question, Eric, and then we're going to have to take a
break.
Got
it. Okay.
So talk to you first.
What time of year was it?
In the summer, probably.
Okay. So it may have been a meteor. And so that's one of the things particularly in August, where we're actually coming up to the Perseid meteor shower, and that is what people call shooting stars.
Yeah.
But you will see sort of flashes in the sky. Sometimes there's streaks, and that's one of sort of the highlights of the mid-August UITP season. And Newport State Park is a great place to see the meteor shower. So my guess is that may be what you saw.
Interesting.
Moving, yeah.
Oh, okay.
It wasn't moving. It just went out.
Yeah.
Do stars die? Stars die.
Stars die, but we don't. If when stars die, they tend to explode.
Oh.
And so they don't tend to go out. They tend to actually get really, really bright. So that's interesting. And off the top of my head, I can't I can't come up with an explanation for you.
We are talking about the Universe in the Park program that UW-Madison runs in state parks around the state of Wisconsin. There are two coming up this weekend. If it's not raining, you can see them. We'll be back in a moment to talk about the stars and take your questions. It's The Morning Show. It's The Morning Show on the Ideas Network. I'm Carrie Kaufman. Are you a stargazer? We'd love to hear from you as we talk today about what to look for in the night sky. There is a program in the parks, state parks here in Wisconsin, called Universe in the Park. And you can go, you can camp out, and people here from UW-Madison will tell you what you are seeing in the night sky. Give us a call, 800-642-1234. Email us at ideas@wpr.org or tweet us at WPR Mornings. One of the things I want to start with first is we had a caller just a minute ago, Eric, who talked about laying in the grass, looking at the stars when she was a kid, and all I could think of was, ouch. So let's do a warning first. If you are going to lay in the grass in Wisconsin, especially in the summer, use bug spray.
Use bug spray. Right, yeah. Right. Use bug spray.
Go up to the roof.
Lay on the roof. No, I'm not going to advise people to lay on the roof.
Okay, fine.
It's Wisconsin. We've got bugs. We have some ticks, right? So you have to take those precautions, which is, as we were talking during the break, October's great.
Right.
And we run Universe in the Park into October. It gets darker earlier. So this is another thing to think about.
Right.
Universe in the Park in the end of June, sun doesn't set till 9:30.
Yes,
so we're getting started fairly late. But if we get into towards the fall, sun setting earlier, the humidity is generally lower, which means the sky is going to be a little bit clearer and there's fewer bugs.
And fall camping. So I want to ask both of you, what interested you? Why are you a grad student here, Julie, in astronomy?
Right. So I'm one of those people that kind of got their childhood dream. I have always wanted to be a scientist, but around like age, I don't know, 10 to 14-ish, I got really into popular science magazines and particularly images from the Hubble telescope. I was really enchanted by them, and I was like, wow, it would be really cool if I could work with those images. Like, I want to make those images. And then I did a little research, and I was like, oh, wow, this is actually something you can do. This is a job you can have. And that was the time at age 14, I was like, I want to get a PhD in astronomy so I can do this. And, you know, here I am over a decade later, and now I get to kind of share that with other people. Like astronomers, we don't really get to make tangible things that, you know, people can buy and sell, but mm-hmm. we make knowledge. Like, we get to see things that no one else gets to see. And so I see it as sort of my job to share that with other people.
And are you focusing on anything in particular in the universe, or just kind of
yes.
like the universe?
That would be quite a bit to study.
It would be a bit to study, yes.
I mean, we're one of the few people who get to claim I study the whole universe. But I particularly study galaxies other than our own. I am interested in how they form and how they evolve over cosmic time, how they acquire the materials to form stars, and how those change. So that's a little bit of what I do.
How'd you get here, Eric?
I was another one of those kids that decided astronomy was cool. And in an earlier era, it was the Voyager missions to Jupiter. And these images on TV of the moon. Like,
yes.
Wow. And the people in the room looked like they were having a great time. and I said, yeah, I want to do that. And then admittedly, Carl Sagan came along with Cosmos. And I said, oh, this is definitely really cool. And so that's how I got started and meandered through the educational process that you have to get to and then was lucky enough to get a job here at UW-Madison.
Very cool. So we had a caller who called and couldn't stay with us, wanted to know more about magnetic fields and how they affect stars. Julie, do you want to take this?
Sure.
First of all, what are magnetic fields? Let's define that first.
Okay, so what is a magnetic field? We have lots of people who are still arguing about the fundamental nature of magnetic fields, so I might not have the best answer.
Okay.
But a lot of things actually create magnetic fields. Even anywhere you have a moving charge, you will create a magnetic field. So technically, even like power lines here on Earth have magnetic fields that they generate. But stars, for example, they turn, right? So just like the Earth rotates on its axis, the sun also does. And it is full of charged particles, electrons and things, and so it generates magnetic fields. Some stars have incredibly intense magnetic fields. Some of them are so strong that they're unimaginable, like compared to some of the magnets we have. Like our strongest magnets here on Earth are shades of what these magnetars can do. We call them magnetars because mm-hmm. they're so powerfully magnetic.
Magnetars. I like that. Okay, Anne? Yeah. And how do they affect the stars? That's do they move them around? Do they suck them up? How does this work?
It's more of like a product of the star than affecting the star. Magnetic fields can have effects on things around stars. Various particles can get trapped in them, and so you can have material streaming onto these magnetic field lines, and this will create energetic reactions. But for the most part, stars themselves are not perturbed by this.
We are talking about the Universe in the Park program that UW-Madison runs in our state parks, and we are taking your calls. Donna from Glenwood, welcome to the program.
Thank you. Good morning.
Good morning. What's your question?
I just wanted to comment on one of the spectacles that I saw years ago. In Eagan, Minnesota, when I lived there at the time, I had seen the Northern Lights, you know, on occasion before that, sometimes in color, some not. But on this one particular night, it was probably early 80s, something, it was like they were showering down from the middle of the sky 360 degrees around us, just like in waves down to the earth. The whole sky was filled, and I have never seen anything like it since. It was phenomenal, just amazing.
Thank you for that. That's I think that may have been the same one that I saw. Actually, it's pretty phenomenal. How often do these happen, Eric?
They're frequent the farther north you get, mm-hmm. but a big one like the caller is mentioning, those are really rare. And that is going back to the cause of these things. That's sort of a particularly strong solar storm that really smacks the Earth with a lot of particles,
right.
and that allows all that energy. Basically, means that the aurora is going to show up farther south. And those are particularly rare to see a spectacular show like that. Really in the continental U.S.
Do you guys actually take trips to like the northern hemisphere or the far southern hemisphere to see different things in the universe?
To see different things in the universe, absolutely. And one of the things, the great thing about doing astronomy is that the southern sky is very different than the northern sky. And some of the constellations that we see in the northern sky, the Big Dipper, for example,
right,
you don't see in the southern sky.
Wow.
But there are things in the southern sky that you don't see in the northern sky. And so we actually have telescope, the Southern African Large Telescope in South Africa, in part because the southern sky is very, very rich astronomically with objects that we don't see here in the northern sky.
Okay, this is totally fascinating. And we are at the end of our time here. Universe in the Parks is a program run by UW-Madison that you can see in lots of state parks. We're going to have a link to it at our website. Eric Wilcott is a professor in the Department of Astronomy at UW-Madison, and Julie Davis is a graduate student in astronomy at UW-Madison. Thank you both for being here.
My pleasure. Thank you.
Now it's time for Wisconsin Life. Today we take a glimpse into a star that's particularly important to the faith of more than 2 billion people. Here's Erica Janik.
One of the most fabled stars in human history, the Star of Bethlehem, is also one of the biggest mysteries. What exactly was the Star of Bethlehem? Meg Jones tells us the story of a Wisconsin man who found one possible answer in his coin collection.
Of all the stars known to humans, one fabled star in particular has grabbed the curiosity and imagination of so many, the Star of Bethlehem. According to the Gospel of Matthew, it's the star that led the wise men to the baby Jesus, an event known as Epiphany, which is celebrated this week in many churches. For astronomers and stargazers, the question has always been, what exactly was the Star of Bethlehem? Michael Molnar, an astronomer who earned his doctorate at the UW-Madison, came up with an interesting theory in the late 1990s. He believes the star that attracted the wise men bearing frankincense, gold, and myrrh was likely the planet Jupiter appearing in the constellation of Aries the Ram. Molnar's quest to unmask the Star of Bethlehem started, oddly enough, when he bought an ancient coin. The coin was minted in Syria soon after the Romans annexed Judea and featured a picture of Zeus on one side and Ares on the other with a star above the ram. Molnar knew that astronomer Claudius Ptolemy had noted that Ares was the symbol of Judea. The Magi told King Herod that they saw a star rising in the east, a morning star. As Jupiter orbits around the sun, it eventually disappears from view on Earth before reemerging in the eastern sky. Molnar began to consider that Jupiter might have been the Star of Bethlehem. Jesus' actual birth date is not known. Biblical historians most often estimate it was sometime between 6 BC and 4 BC. Molnar checked the dates of when Jupiter was in the east and the constellation of Aries was close and referenced them against the years when scholars believe Jesus was born. Only one date popped up, April 17th, 6 BC. Whether Jupiter eclipsed by the moon is actually the star heralding the birth of Jesus is certainly open to debate, but it's a fascinating theory, and one that might never have come to light. That's because Molnar is lucky to be alive. When he was a PhD student at UW-Madison, he was working in his sixth-floor office on the evening of August 23rd, 1970. Late that night, he tried to buy candy from a vending machine, but it jammed and took his money. Still hungry, he decided to go home much earlier than normal. Not long after, a van stolen by anti-war protesters exploded outside Sterling Hall, killing a researcher. Molnar's office went up in flames, and he lost much of his research. Part of his burned dissertation was found blown out of the building days later. Molnar went on to perform pioneering research in magnetic stars and to build his coin collection, never realizing the scientific clues his hobby might hold.
Meg Jones is a journalist and the author of World War II Milwaukee. Wisconsin Life is a co-production of Wisconsin Public Radio and Wisconsin Public Television in partnership with the Wisconsin Humanities Council. Additional support comes from Lowell and Mary Peterson of Appleton. Find more Wisconsin Life on our website, wisconsinlife.org, and on Facebook. I'm Erica Janik.
Wisconsin Life is produced by Maureen McCullum. These stories are part of our weekly edition of Wisconsin Weekend here on The Morning Show. What's happening in your part of the state that could reach all corners of Wisconsin? Send your ideas for Wisconsin Weekend to mornings at WPR.org. That's mornings at WPR.org. And we'll explore your tip for the Wisconsin Weekend program. I'm Carrie Kaufman. It's The Morning Show on the Ideas Network.